You're listening to a punk movie review right here on the Prairie Punk Press Network.
Nothing ever changes, man. 50 years from now, we're all going to be dead, and there'll be new people standing here drinking beer, eating pizza, bitching and moaning about the price of Oreos, and they won't even know we were ever here.
Hi everyone, you're listening to a punk movie review. This is episode 2. We're doing a movie called Suburbia. Not to be confused with a movie called Suburbia, which we'll get into that whole confusion later. Suburbia is a Richard Linklater film. It came out in 1996, released in the United States in 1997. Don't know why it came out a year later in the United States, being that it is an American movie. It was written by a guy named Eric Bogosian. It's a movie about Gen X people doing Gen X stuff in a very annoying Gen X way. My name's Nick Bone.
Hi, I'm Jerbear. I fucking hate this movie.
Yeah, the weird thing is it's not as bad as I remember, but it's still terrible. I just remember it being way worse than I actually thought it was this time around. But it was odd.
Yeah, so I remember absolutely despising it the first time I saw it. I believe it was with my girlfriend, and I was like, Suburbia, I've heard of this movie. It's like a punk rock classic from the 80s. We should watch this movie. And so we did, and come to find out that it was not the punk rock movie. It was this piece of shit. And I mostly at the time, I was really annoyed by it because I just thought it was really dumb. Then when we talked about doing this podcast, I watched it with my wife, and she was like, it's not that bad. And I was like, it's not that bad. I wasn't fully paying attention to it. I certainly wasn't viewing it with a critical eye. I was just kind of watching it, and I was like, it's not as bad as I remember. But I didn't take any notes at that point, and I wasn't watching it with a critical eye. So I watched it again. So that is thrice that I've watched this fucking piece of shit. And the third time was when, like, the problems really stood out to me. And we can get to that later. I don't like it. Do you know how old the writer is? Because Richard Linklater is a fucking boomer.
Yeah, he is.
So
he's on the younger end of the boomers. I think he's almost, yeah, a Gen X.
He's almost Gen Z. Right, sorry, yeah. Gen X. He was born in 60, I believe. Mm-hmm.
So
do that to me.
The writer, Eric Bogosian, he was born in 1953. He's 71 years old.
Okay, so he's even over and that older. That yeah. explains some more because...
Solid boomer.
Yeah. And that's one of my biggest problems with it. Basically, it seems like a boomer-ass take on what they think Gen X is like.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because in 1996, I would have been about 2 to 3 years younger than the people in this movie. So they're basically my peers. I didn't know a single fucking asshole to act like those motherfuckers.
Right. Because they were supposed to be like, what, between like 19 and like 22 years old, kind of in that range?
I think... around there. I think
because they were all out of high school. They covered that.
Yeah. Tim had already been in the military and come home.
Mm-hmm.
So he's at least, I would say, 21, 22.
Yeah.
Around there. And in 96, I would have been 18. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Yeah, me too.
Close enough to not act like
a fucking... We would have been a couple classes behind them in high school, basically.
Right.
Yeah, it's interesting. So... the writer of this film, he also has a lot of acting credits. He has a pretty thick resume on IMDb.
Oh, really? What has he acted in? Anything I know?
So he started his acting career in a movie called Born in Flames, 1983. I think some of the more popular stuff that he's been in, he did voices. He was a voice actor in a few things, including the Beavis and Butthead Do America movie. He was in a movie called Igby Goes Down. I don't know if you ever saw that, early 2000s.
I never saw it, but I've heard of it.
He was in a movie called Wonderland. He was in... I know I've seen him in a few things. He was also in one of the main characters, I think, in one of the Law and Orders. Law and Order Criminal Intent. He was in 61 episodes.
Jesus.
He played Captain Danny Ross in Law and Order Criminal Intent. So that's probably what he's most known for, I would guess.
Yeah, man. He's a boomer-ass motherfucker. Yeah. Right, cool.
I wrote in my notes, I wrote, are they cosplaying Gen X or are they really Gen X?
Well, I mean, the actors are mostly Gen X, but...
Yeah.
But
if you told me this movie was released in 2022 and it was just about Gen X, but only based on the fragmented memories of boomers, I'd be like, okay, that makes sense. Like,
yeah.
Like, they just got a bunch of kids to cosplay Gen Xers just based on fragmented memories, because that's kind of what it feels like.
Linklater, probably most famous for... his love letter to his generation, which would have been Dazed and Confused, right?
That's yes. Probably. Dazed and Confused was his most popular movie at this point in his career. But mm-hmm. That was not the only movie he'd had out.
Oh, right. Slackers was a piece of shit, too.
Slacker was awful. And then he also did Before Sunrise, which I actually remember enjoying. I haven't seen it in a long time.
Yeah, I haven't seen it in a long time, but that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, so Dazed and Confused is a pretty good movie.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
It mm-hmm. is certainly his generation.
Right, and it's something he's writing, directing.
He understood that time. He understood mm-hmm. the people. He understood how teenagers would have acted then mm-hmm. and behaved. And he knows fuck all about what teenagers in 1996 or young adults in 1996 were doing.
Right, right.
The amount of racism.
It is was astounding. Such casual racism too. My God.
I remember 96 pretty well. And mm-hmm. I remember there being some casual racism like that.
Yeah.
But not, I don't, it seemed a lot to me. Mm-hmm. In 96 I was fully anti-racist, I was fully anti-Nazi, like I was like loud and obnoxious about those sentiments,
right?
So I don't, it was very jarring to me. I don't remember most people being that shitty back then. Maybe right. I'm and- wrong maybe there's maybe I've well, got
there,
rose
there were
glasses,
people who but. Were that shitty, but we fucking called them out.
Yeah.
Like, especially like the type of like people they're supposed to be. I mean, these are like, I mean, that's I wouldn't go as far kids. As to say that they're punk rockers, but they're definitely like people who would hang out with a left-leaning crowd, generally like alternative kids.
Well, like, yeah. I mean, the caricature of the Riot Girl, which was just she's a fucking cartoon character. And I have other thoughts on that. I'll get there in a moment.
Oh, yeah.
But just that coding makes me think that this group of people were at least left adjacent.
Yeah.
But like allowing that kind of racism and misogyny and everything go on, it's just fucking wild to me.
Right. Nikki Katz's like character would have fit in at a modern day Trump rally.
Yeah.
Like if that character were a real person and let's say that character's still alive today, well, like he 100% was part of January 6th. Like he's that type of dude.
Well, if he was in Wichita in 1996, he would have been hanging out with the River City Skins.
Yeah.
Like, that's some fucking Nazi behavior.
Yeah, for sure.
The bullshit he did.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it was very jarring.
And then, they just kind of kept excusing it.
Yeah.
They're just like, laughing
it off. Oh, he's such a scamp.
Well, and what was weird to me is they kind of coded him as like, you know, having like PTSD or something like that. But I mean, okay, the U.S. is always involved in foreign wars, yes, but we were not overtly sending regular troops into foreign wars in that part of the 90s. We were doing more covert ops and things like that.
Right.
But
yeah, he's too young to have been in Desert Storm.
Right.
The timeline is too soon for like Iraq.
He wasn't like if they would have made him like a Navy SEAL who like got kicked out or like some sort of like special forces, I'd be like, oh, okay, he probably was doing covert operations. Mm-hmm. But he was just like, he worked in a kitchen for the Air Force. Right.
Again, what
war was he in 1996 working in a fucking kitchen in the Air Force? What the fuck?
Right. It's boomer bullshit, man. Like, yeah. he's not a Vietnam War vet. That's how he was coded.
He was just some sort
of Vietnam vet.
Right. He was a whiny fucking middle class kid who joined the military, realized it was fucking hard and he was going to get yelled at a lot. And he cut part of his own finger off to get out because he had to work in a kitchen for the Air Force. I've known people like that. I come from a military family. I've known plenty of people like this guy. And like the whole time I'm watching, I'm like, I got this guy's fucking number. This guy is just such a fucking joke. And right. I will give Nicky Cat, the actor who played him, some credit because I'm like, he's fucking selling it. He is selling it.
Yeah.
Like, no, he did a good job.
And, you know, that's one of the positives we talk about later. But the acting in the movie was fine. I mean, they did well with what they had to work with. But, you know, and then is it Suze or Susie?
Yeah, Suze. Yeah, the caricature of the riot girl.
Yeah, that seems like an intentional boomer mocking of 90s feminism and Riot Girl. Like, she was a fucking clown in that movie. And I fully believe that the fucking writer, whatever his fucking Law and Order ass is, and Linklater were mocking feminism and Riot Girl, and it really pissed me off. Like,
oh, for sure,
her character is so fucking terrible,
yeah,
and so fucking annoying, and I think it's intentional to mock that, and it really fucking pissed me off.
Right, and her poem, "Fuck All Men," like, is just what they think,
right?
Like a feminist poem would be, but it's just her being weirdly performative and not really challenging the patriarchy in any way, just listing a bunch of guys and saying, fuck them. Like, I mean, okay. This clearly was written by a man who, you know, doesn't really understand like how, like what a feminist poem would actually sound like.
Fuck Oliver Stone. Fuck Bill Clinton. Fuck Howard Stern. Fuck Michael Bolton. Fuck O.J. Simpson. Fuck Pope John Paul. Fuck my dad. Fuck all the men. Fuck all the men. Fuck all the men! Bang your head. Blow your nose. Run down the street. Suck a hose. Chew my lips, eat some shit, eat a stick of dynamite and blow yourself to bits. Shut your mouth, go away, drink my piss, have a nice day. I hope you cry and never doubt. I hope you die with blood in your mouth. I hope your lies will no more show. It's in my eyes, it's in your snout. You're a pig! I know that too! I can't do jig! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you! Fuck you!
I probably wouldn't put this on Linklater. I would put it on the fucking writer. What's his goddamn name again? Bogosian or what the fuck ever. I would
Eric Bogosian. Bogosian. Yeah.
I'll jump out on a limb and say that motherfucker hates women. Just because all the women in this movie were portrayed as fucking horrible.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And it's really gross.
Yeah.
And this is like I said before, I just kinda like didn't notice so much before because I wasn't actually paying attention, but paying attention to it this time, like that's why I hate this thing so fucking much. Mm-hmm. There's nothing to like about this movie.
Right.
There's no one to root for.
No.
All the characters are bad. All the characters are fucking terrible.
And they're all fucking posers.
Yeah. Well,
except Steve Zahn's character is the only character who is, don't get me wrong, he's not a good person, but he's the only one who's not a poser because he's the only one not pretending to be something that he's not. Yeah, he knows that he's just a dumbass who likes sex and likes food and wants to smoke pot and drink. Yeah. And he does not pretend like he's anything other than that.
If I were in his shoes every morning, I'd get up singing, man. Do my workout, take a shower, followed by a hearty breakfast, steak and eggs. Wash down with a pot of hot coffee, six pack of Coors Light. Then I'd order my bodyguard to go find my babe, who would appear decked out in her all black leather Victoria's Secret custom-made bodysuit. So I'd like have to chew off all her clothes until she was completely nude. Except she'd have these amazing dragon tattoos all over her body and pierced nipples with little gold peace signs hanging from them. And then she'd take out this half ounce of blow, we'd snap out a few Mongo lines, vaporize a few million brain cells, screw for about an hour, then spend the rest of the morning trashed watching Gilligan.
That sounds so great, man. Yes. Yes. Hey, what would you do in the afternoon?
Same, more of the same. Yeah, just keep doing the same thing all the time, around the clock, with an occasional burger or slice thrown in for our vitamins and energy. Wow. Then, instead of watching Gilligan, we watch Captain Kirk.
Giovanni Ribisi. Mm-hmm. He should be the character we like. He should be the one we're rooting for.
Right.
And
you can make him cynical. You can still make him cynical and have him be a likable character.
The amount of, like, again, he's a cartoon character of what a boomer thinks Gen X was in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
A complete fucking narcissist, a complete fucking nihilist. And I don't fucking understand how you can make such flat, one-dimensional characters and make this a movie. It's unbelievable. It's unfucking believable how shitty the writing was for this movie and how you have, there's 2 hours to develop characters and somehow they're all still one dimensional.
Absolutely. The pathetic. Only positive I would give this movie outright is that everybody in the cast gives it their all. Like everybody in the cast, it has a good cast.
It has a good cast, and they worked well with what they had. The cinematography was fine.
Yeah,
it was typical '90s cinematography. Nothing. Right. It was full shot, well lit.
The audio was good. They technically knew what they were doing, how to make a movie from a technical aspect.
Right. That's it. Everything else about it was fucking horseshit. Fucking.
I guess I'll go through the cast really quick because I guess we haven't done that. So, you know, as people, you know, listeners have already surmised, Giovanni Ribisi is our main character, our protagonist. Then there's also Parker Posey, Nikki Catt, Steve Zahn, Samia Shoaib, and I apologize if I mispronounce any of these names, and AJ Naidu, who I think the only thing I remember him from is Office Space. So he was in Office Space
a couple years later,
which was around that same, I think maybe 2 years after that at most.
Something like that.
And he was the gas station clerk/owner. And then Supporting cast. We have Amy Carey, Dina Spabey, and Jace Bartow. But yeah, I don't know if you knew this or not. When I was looking up trivia, AJ Naidoo actually was nominated, the only nominee and the only nomination for an award. He got nominated for the Film Independent Spirit Awards Best Supporting Male Actor in 1998. And he lost to Jason Lee.
Wow.
Can you guess what movie he lost to, or Jason Lee won for?
Was it Mallrats, or was it in 98? It would have been Chasing Amy.
Chasing Amy. Yeah, that's right. It was Chasing Amy. Yeah. So that was the only even nomination for an award. And I mean, he did do a great job. Still prefer him in Office Space, just because that's a way better movie. So, in the movie Office Space, he played the character Samir, one of the main three protagonists. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Michael Bolton, Samir, and,
Peter,
whatever the fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Peter. Yeah.
Yeah. Great movie. Got to rewatch that one. Probably won't be able to do it for the show, but it's still a great movie. Definitely watch Office Space. If you watch Suburbia and you're like, boy, I'd really rather watch a way better movie than this to cleanse my palate after this, then just watch Office Space. There you go.
Can you look up when Empire Records, and this, I confuse parts of Suburbia and Empire Records until I just watched it. The whole Rex Manning thing really confused me with Pony Boy, or what the fuck ever his stupid name is.
Pony. Just Pony.
Pony.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. when did Empire Records come out?
1995 is when Empire Records came out.
Okay. So I'm wondering if the filmmakers maybe wrote this with boomers in mind, and then based off the success of Empire Records, singles maybe even, and the whole like other more Gen X stories, they decided to update it to appeal to Gen Xers more. And maybe that's why it's so fucking terrible and so clumsy and so bad. But I don't know. I don't know.
That wouldn't surprise me.
Seems fishy. And
yeah,
it's just fucking terrible.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if it had been originally written with a different generation of mind. And yeah, it just kind of reskinned to be like, oh, hey, these Gen X movies are really big right now. Let's do something, you know, to capitalize on that.
Just looking at like Tim's character or whatever, it seems like he came back from Vietnam.
Right. Exactly. You know, he doesn't make any sense.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Right. He doesn't make any sense.
He is out of place as a character in this universe.
Yeah.
It would have made more sense if, because he keeps saying that he went to third world countries.
What the fuck do you know about the third world? You been there? No? Oh, well, I have. Fuckers live like sardines in a can over there, you know? Everything stinks. It's true. There's no, you know, law, no order, no nothing. The assholes come over here, they think it's gonna be the same.
He's a human being, you can give him that much.
Actually, the only thing I gotta give that guy is a one-way ticket back to Greaseball Land.
He just talks about third world countries as if he's spent time in them, but I'm just like, you know, we're not involved in anything where they're sending just regular troops in 1996.
Right. Yeah, if he was special forces, maybe Somalia, maybe.
Right.
It was around the Bosnia conflict. You know, maybe there.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's no. I mean, obviously, U.S. soldiers are stationed all over the world. There's 800 military bases around this fucking planet.
Right.
So, I mean, sure, he could have been stationed there, but why?
The only permanent U.S. military asset in a third world country is, as far as I know, Camp Lemonnier Djibouti. And that's a Navy base. That's not even an Air Force base. So,
I mean. Well, and how long has that been a base?
That's a good question. I mean, it was a French base first, hence the name. But but yeah, I think they turned it over sometime around the 90s, I want to say. Probably around that time.
Fair enough. Yeah. What I mean, what would it have become a base maybe during the first Desert Storm or something?
Maybe. But once again, like, I doubt that. And it would have made more sense if he'd like been like a cook in the Navy and he was on a ship and they'd gone into ports in third world countries. Like, I'd be like, okay, right. I could buy that. The Navy is the only branch that deploys during peacetime because of the whole Teddy Roosevelt, Great White Fleet, forward presence of power and all that stuff. So I'd be like, okay, I can buy it. I can buy that. But yeah, he was just some Air Force schlub, you know, probably stationed in like North Dakota. Like, it just, yeah, his character didn't make any sense. Giovanni Ribisi's character didn't make any sense to me. He was way too cynical. Like, his cynicism was performative.
Again, it's a boomer take on stereotypes of jaded Gen Xers, and it's a really poor representation of it. Like,
right,
just pathetic.
It is. And Steve Zahn, like, I knew people who were kind of like him, but like that was like, yeah, a caricature version of like the people I knew who were kind of like he was on just all the time, and you're like, nobody is on that much.
Like, even the most ADHD of ADHDers that I know are not on that much.
Right.
It was too much, and it was too ridiculous. It's just absurd. Right. Fucking absurd.
Right.
And I'm not saying this because I'm precious about Gen X. I barely fucking relate to Gen X as, you know, I don't know.
Yeah. And we're tail end of Gen X anyway. Yeah.
Right. Well, they would have been too, basically.
Right.
In 96 is 22 year olds. We'll just say that. I mean, yeah. Going to community and maybe not even 22, maybe 2021. I don't know.
Right.
They were all talking about going to college still. So
Right. And Giovanni Ribisi's character, they do mention that he'd gone to college and dropped out. But they even mentioned when Pony comes back that, the first thing he says is, wow, man, the corner, it hasn't changed. And Giovanni Ribisi's character says, well, it's only been a year.
The corner. I mean, nothing's changed.
Oh, shit, man. You've only been gone for a year, man.
So... Right. We're led to believe
1920.
Yeah, like, so it's not that long after high school. That means Nikki Katz's character, Tim. I mean, he was probably only in the Air Force for about a year. Yeah, and
it doesn't make any fucking sense.
And the actors. What's funny is I looked up. I don't remember all their ages specifically, but I looked up all their ages, and AJ Naidu is actually younger than most of the other actors who are playing. Like,
oh, really?
Yeah, he's like one of the younger people in the cast.
Characters that are supposed to be younger than him.
Right, right. Because he's like, and it's an interesting thing too, and I don't want to give too much credit to Richard Linklater, and I kept trying to. So my wife watched the first maybe two-thirds of the movie with me before she was like, yeah, I'm just kind of done with this, and she left, understandably. And I was like, I got to power through it, man. I got to, because I got to do it for the podcast. This is for work.
It was rough. It was rough to get through.
But I was trying to say, she did read the end of the movie, though, so she knows how it ends. And I was like, well, maybe this is a commentary on Richard Linklater saying that, this hardworking immigrant came here. He did all the right things. He owns a small business. He is going to engineering school, and he's trying to live the American dream, and he's getting screwed over. Whereas the shiftless, white guy, who's Steve Zahn's character, just kind of stumbles ass backwards into success at the end. And maybe it's a commentary on how the system is stacked against you know, people who come here and people of color and things like that. And she said, I think you're giving Richard Linklater way too much credit.
I agree. I was just, and, you know, that whole character and his wife is another, like, proof of how much they fucking hate women, because why would his wife divorce him for that?
Right. That's what I didn't get
to. She threw off their engagement ring. Why?
Right.
That's fucking stupid.
Look, just get off my property.
What?
Look, get down off my property.
Why? What are you gonna do? Huh? You gonna shoot me for standing on your fucking trash can?
Get off my property!
Hey, you know what? Go fuck yourself.
Fuck you! You know, I'll call the police!
Go ahead, man! They love you just about as much as I do.
Tim, can we go? This is ridiculous.
Hey, Ma! Look at me! Top of the world, Ma!
Get off my roof! You fucking drunk! No, hold on. You bum! Look, Patricia!
Oh, there you are, honey! We were waiting for you. What happened?
Look, get down now! You fucking drunk!
You know what?
You
go
bum!
Ahead. Shoot me! Go ahead! Fucking shoot me! Come on! Come on, man! Come on!
Get off my roof!
Oh, shit. Jeff! Jeff, come up here!
Look, okay, come on, look. What are you doing? Look, that's enough! My wife called the police. They're coming!
Jeff! Come up here!
Is that Bibi?
Come on!
Oh, look, look, you see? Look, they go drinking on the roof. Hey, what? Is she drunk? Yeah, just take her home.
Come back at mulk me kaha phasa diya. Ye sab tumhare wajah se ho raha hai. Main wapas ja rahi hu.
Look,
bas, bahut ho gaya.
So what do you say?
Ready? Bahut ho gaya.
Maine kuch bhi nahi kiya. Yeah, what are you saying? Please.
Right. You know, just in just a few scenes earlier, she was holding a gun on somebody trying to defend him, and then she's leaving him? Nothing that happened was his fault. Absolutely nothing that happened was his fault. But yeah, I agree. I do think that I mean, this is kind of, this feels like 90s, like, yeah, I mean, we all knew these guys in the 90s, this, like, phony kind of allyship, phony feminism. I mean, you know, the biggest one of all time was Joss Whedon.
Yeah.
This kind of like, oh, you think that they're, you know, an ally, but then you kind of dig a little deeper and you realize, like, oh, there's a lot of misogyny buried under there that you have not come to terms with yet. And you probably should.
So. Well, this movie doesn't even mask it. There's not even... It's not even like hinting at feminism. It's openly mocking feminism.
Yeah, yeah. Every like woman character in this movie is just the worst caricature of a riot girl, the worst caricature of a woman with substance abuse problems and sexual shame, and you know, the rich girl who likes to play in the gutter, which was Parker Posey's character. You know, just the worst examples of, you know, extreme versions of, yeah, there were people like that, sure. But, you know, the odds are that you wouldn't hit every single one of those tropes in a group of friends. It just didn't, like, it's not very, and I realize it's a movie, so it's not supposed to be realistic, but my God, every woman in that movie was portrayed as just the worst.
It's cruel
to
the women of the film, and, you know, the dudes too, but I have a hard time feeling sorry for how they're portrayed. I mean, just because they're so shitty.
Yeah.
But yeah, fuck. It's, you know, what it boils down to is stupid people doing stupid things. And it's like, there's a middling, very contrived bit of drama there, but there's nothing compelling. It's all, you know, you got one dimensional characters making bad decisions and some, you know, people are treated poorly as a plot device.
And it would be one thing if all these horrible portrayals were supposed to, you know, were supposed to be supposed to make you think, or supposed to be social commentary. I mean, I don't think that, you know,
it's too dumb for that.
It
that
is.
Movie is too, it's too dumb for to make those connections, to have anything to say at all.
It's really, it's try hard. It's a really try hard mm-hmm. movie.
Yeah.
And it's really obvious, it, you know, and even like, Tim, Nikki Katz's character, you know, dropping the F slur just out of nowhere. And all the just casual racism, you know, Steve Zahn's character, doing the fake Indian accent or Pakistani accent, rather was just,
I mean, that was pretty standard fare for the '90s, to be honest. I mean,
yeah.
What was it? Hank Azaria stopped doing, Apu mm-hmm. in what? 2016, 2017.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which took way too long, but you know, that's fairly standard. So the other thing that really bothered me was Nikki Katz's character. Why did he lie to Giovanni Ribisi's character about Parker Posey being dead in the van?
I
don't understand that at all.
You gotta help me out, man. I'm in trouble.
Oh, no. This is no big deal, you know. I can come down and get you out.
No. I'm not talking about this. I did a bad thing, Jeff.
What'd you do?
That chick, Erica.
What happened?
Well, I took her out to the van, you know. It was going all hot and heavy, and she started hanging on me, you know? And she started crying. Tim, what's the matter? I love you. Don't go. And I was just looking at her stupid face and stupid eyes. Stupid mouth. And I was filled with disgust, man. And I really...
What'd you do?
I hit her.
You hit her? Wait a minute. Why'd you hit her?
Because I was fucked up, man. I just kept hitting her till she didn't move anymore.
Wait a minute. She's unconscious?
Go look, man. Okay, get him out. Go look. Go see for yourself if you got the guts.
I don't understand what motivation he would have to do that. Mm-hmm. Why he was such an unrepentant, villainous prick.
Yeah.
For, like, there's no motivation for him to be as shitty as he was and to lie to his supposed best friend about killing a woman in a van.
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. There's no explanation for it. There's no motivation behind it. It's just, it's befuddling.
There's so many misdirects, especially in the third act, so many misdirects. And the only time you see Nikki Katz's character, Tim, you know, maybe you think like, oh, maybe they're going to develop this a little bit, is when Parker Posey. So he tries to sleep with Parker Posey. He can't get it up. And she says,
she tries to sleep with him because she's a go-getter.
Right. She tries to sleep with
him.
She's
a corporate
right
woman who knows what she wants, and she's gonna get it.
So he can't get it up, and she says,
"It's okay. This kind of thing happens. It just never happened to me."
And he kind of turns away from her, and you see his eyes tearing up, and you think like, "Oh, are we gonna see some character development? Are we gonna visit, you know, some sort of traumatic past? Are we going to like find out more about this character?" Like, no, never talked about again.
I will say, I did get one laugh out of this movie, and it was from that scene when she asked what his tattoo meant.
Yeah.
And it was, what, CCB, and he's like, she asked what it stood for, and he said, taking care of business, and she just laughed at it.
That was funny. Parker Posey. She did a great job
of the movie.
Parker Posey did a great job with very little material. So hats off to her. She always brings. She's an obligatory staple in every Gen X movie. I think they were actually required to have her in there because it is a Gen X movie. But she always brings the thunder in every movie she's in. So she did a great job with almost nothing. So good for her.
Yeah.
Also, just a weird thing that they added in there, and I'm sure they must have had some kind of sponsorship, but so much Coors Light. So much Coors Light.
Oh, yeah.
What group of misfit drunkards in the 90s was walking around drinking Coors Light? That's what my dad drank. My dad drank Coors Light.
They're in fucking Texas.
Yeah.
We all know they'd be drinking Lone Star.
Absolutely. They'd be drinking Lone Star beer. The national beer of Texas. Why the fuck are they drinking Coors Light? You can tell this is written by boomers, and boomers... the boomer who wrote it is not from Texas. The guy who directed it actually is from Texas, so he should have corrected him and said, like, hey, these guys would not be drinking fucking Coors Light, especially a bunch of Gen Xers. Come on.
Right.
Coors Light was like, that was like the boomer beer. That was your dad's beer.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, when I worked at a bar, we called it character flaw.
Yeah, nice. That feels accurate to me. Yeah, it's just... It's not at all what they would have been drinking. The only way it would have been believable that they were drinking Coors Light is if they were all specifically said to be under 21 and it was just the only thing they could get their hands on for whatever reason. That's the only time.
They still would have got Lone Star. They're in fucking Texas.
Right, yeah.
I think it comes with your birth certificate.
I will say that they really obviously shot in Texas. So they shot around Austin.
Oh, yeah.
Austin definitely looks very different now than it did in the 90s. But, boy, I don't know if you were getting, like, strong vibes of 90s Wichita. But I certainly was.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, when Aaron was a guest on A Prairie Punk House Companion, we talked about, sitting behind Quick Trip eating sleazy cheesies and drinking beer.
Yeah.
It's a thing that people did in the 90s.
Absolutely.
Sat at a Quickie Mart by the dumpster and got drunk.
Right.
Or whatever.
And I've had people like shop owners and managers and stuff come out and yell at me, and maybe I'll give a snarky comment or something, back in the day when I would do that, but I would leave because I'd be worried they were going to call the fucking cops on me. I mean, I guess they do cover that the cops just don't give a shit in that town.
Well, they know the cops. They're friends with the cops.
Well, fucking Steve Zahn's character is cousins with one of the cops.
Yeah, that's what it was. That's what it was. It was cousins.
That's it!
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm calling the police.
Why? We're just standing here.
Look, you're trespassing.
Hey, call cops. Call him right now, man. Hey, maybe my cousin Jerry will show up. He'll definitely take your word over mine. You tell him about the trespassing. I'll tell him about how you sell beer to minors.
I'm not joking around now, okay? Come on, let's go.
And then they cover the one of the cops when they put Tim in the back of the police car. He obviously knows both of them because he says to one of them, like, hey, how's your divorce going? And then to the other one, he says, you were a shitty linebacker on the football team, like implying that they were on the football team together in high school. So,
right. Well, and the dude at the liquor store talks to Tim about football because apparently Tim used to play football.
Yeah. The way that everybody is portrayed. Now, don't get me wrong. I remember the 90s being, we were cynical and we were angry, but I feel like we were more focused. We weren't just angry for the sake of being angry and cynical to the point of being cynical like a cartoon character. Another thing I took issue with was, so when Pony is playing all those songs for them out by in that strip mall, that is not music that they would have been into. That I was listening to that. And this is when my wife was still watching with me, and she was like, is he like supposed to be singing like he sounds more like a 60s folk musician?
You may think there's nothing
And the truth is hard to see. To be a man invisible is a remarkable thing to be.
Which leads to back to your theory of maybe this wasn't written with Gen X in mind originally, because Yeah, he was playing like 60s folk music with the harmonica and the guitar. He's supposed to be in a 90s alternative band.
That would not be on MTV.
No, they would not be into it. They would be mocking him mercilessly.
Right.
That's fair enough. But even the ones who were like praising him would be like, it sounds like my dad's music.
All right, let's do the segments that we've got.
Okay, so
I've done enough bashing this piece of shit.
All right, yeah, and I could go on forever complaining about this movie. And really quick before we do get into the segments, I do want to talk about all of the misdirects at the end, where
you were getting ready to talk about that.
So distracted. Tim, Nikki Katz's character implies that he killed Parker Posey. He says this to Giovanni Ribisi, when he is being put in the back of a cop car. Right before the cop car drives off, he says, he basically confesses that he murdered her. Giovanni Ribisi goes back to look at, there's an abandoned van in the back where, people hook up, and he says he murdered her there. And he picks up her cell phone, in the dirt near the van, but he doesn't bother to look in the van, and he just assumes that her body is in there. But he's too afraid to look. And he tries to make an anonymous phone call to the cops, which doesn't really go anywhere. And then, they let Tim out of jail, in the next part, Steve Zahn's character comes up and says that he spent all night with her, and they were fucking a lot, and he was like, oh yeah, like we were back at the hotel room, we fucked all night.
Showed up last night at the hotel, we had this great time together. I stayed in her room last night, man. What can I say?
And he's basically like, to Steve Zahn's character, like, you're lying. I know you're lying. Why do you keep making shit up like this?
And Steve Zahn throughout the whole movie talks a ton of shit.
Just tons of shit.
Talks about getting a Hummer from somebody he delivered pizza to.
Right.
Like all sorts of outlandish shit. So it sounds like, he's making up outlandish fucking lies again.
Right. And the first twist is a limo pulls up, the window rolls down, and it's Parker Posey. And that's when she says, oh, my cell phone, you found it, good. And then her and Steve Zahn are apparently a couple now. And he's going to move to LA with her to
make music videos.
Make music videos. Despite having no videography experience, or not much anyway. He's an amateur at best. And so you're like, okay, so she's not dead. And then that's when Nikki Katz's character, he gets out of jail, comes back, and, Giovanni Ribisi starts asking, like, why did you lie to me? And then he pulls out a gun and says he's going to go shoot AJ Nadu's character, who's the convenience store clerk. And so you're like, okay, well, this went in a weird direction. And then AJ Nadu is there, and he pulls out a gun. So you have like a real like Texas standoff, I guess. And there's these two guys standing there pointing guns at each other. And then somebody discovers the, God, I can't remember. What's the blonde character's name?
BB.
Oh, BB. BB. Okay. Somebody discovers BB has overdosed on the rooftop, and They both put their guns away.
I was confused about that because she went somewhere.
Yeah.
And went in a bathroom. Did she take a bunch of pills when she was there?
So it's implied that she took a lot of pills and then she downed a bottle of whiskey.
Yeah, I knew she drank the whiskey. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if that scene of her in the bathroom looking in a medicine cabinet was her actually taking pills or like what. It was not explained or shown well at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a little confused by that. I'm assuming that she took a handful of pills and drank the bottle of whiskey.
Yeah. That is, yeah, that's what's implied, is that she's overdosed on pills and whiskey. So then they're trying to get her help, and they suddenly just kind of put their guns away, and suddenly Tim is the good guy trying to rescue her, and he tells AJ Naidu that he's going to get in trouble because she overdosed on his rooftop, and he's going to get him put in prison or get him, you know, in trouble in some way because of that.
That's how that works.
And then that's when AJ Naidu's wife pulls off her wedding ring and throws it at him and runs off.
For some reason.
He's just standing there going, I didn't do anything. And that's the last time we see him. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Implying that he's probably going to lose everything. And they made it very clear, too, that he was an engineering student. He owned his own business and was doing everything right for the American dream. And then it's all going to fall apart because of this. And we just never visit the fact again that Tim showed up there with a firearm ready to kill this man.
Yeah.
Because
a bonehead would do.
And not because of their conflict early. They had conflict through the movie, but because he was an immigrant and he was from Pakistan. That was the reason. He didn't like immigrants coming here. They said it multiple times in the movie.
Why'd you start this in the first place, man? They never hurt you. They never hurt me. They hurt me every day with their attitude. You know, like they even have a right. Who the fuck do they think they are? Let me tell you something. I was born here, all right? I'm an American. And I'm owed something. Look, they took it from me. They're just people, all right? They got feelings, you know? What about my feelings? What about my fucking feelings? These assholes, they come over here, they know all the answers, right? Well, they don't know shit.
Just put the gun down.
No.
Just put it down.
You know, the way that they phrased it is something straight out of, you know, like a MAGA political campaign, basically. And it was just weird. That's why I thought, like, well, maybe this is social commentary on, you know, the immigrant American comes here with the American dream, does everything right, but the system is stacked against them. And then, you know, some dumbass like Steve Zahn's character can fall ass backwards into a relationship with Parker Posey and being a videographer.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Maybe that is giving Richard Linklater too much credit.
Yeah, I think it is.
That kind of sums up the movie, I guess. And like I said, I could go on all night about how bad this is. I could nitpick and complain about every little tiny detail, but I think we should get into our positives and negatives. So for every movie, we can say the things that we think are bad about it, but we always try to give some positives. Do you want to get us started with what you think was negative about it?
Oh, we're doing negatives first?
Sure, let's start off on a bad note positives. Because this movie got me in a bad mood.
The story's fucking stupid. It's so fucking contrived and trite, and the characters are one-dimensional. The writer has no experience or knowledge about what teenagers were like in 1996.
Mm-hmm.
At all. Had no business writing this fucking movie.
So, yeah, for my negatives, I just put three things: casual racism, way too try hard Gen X, and way too many dark fake outs at the end. Like, there just kept being twists and twists and twists and twists. It was more intolerable than an M. Night Shyamalan movie with all just the dumb twists that kept happening. Like, shit happening just for the sake of shit happening, basically. It felt like one of those, you know, when you would, you write the first sentence in a story and then pass it to the next person. They write the next sentence in the story.
Yeah.
Like it felt like the movie version of that.
Round robin bullshit.
Yeah. Now you got to say some positive stuff about it. What you got?
You know, I like Giovanni Ribisi and I like Parker Posey. I think the cast did a good job with what they had. The cinematographer did a good job. He held that camera real good on the shots. You know, the sound design and mixing was good. All of the lips synced up with the dialogue. And it ended.
Yes. Yeah. That's one I'll add to. So for my positives, I've got a lot of the attention to detail, like the TV on top of the other TV in Cartoon Riot Girl's house. That was good. I knew so many people that had that set up. Once again, the acting, I thought the acting was great. Like, I thought everybody did a great job with what they had. And even you know, fake Riot Girl. I feel like a lot of that was just how she was directed.
We were supposed to dislike her. We were supposed to think she was a clown.
Yeah.
Which, you know, kind of sucks.
It does. And of course, a big positive for me, Sonic Youth did the entire score and actually wrote the song Sunday. Yeah. The song Sunday is written for this movie. That's why it was written.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I do like Sonic Youth.
So yeah, I also like Sonic Youth and I enjoyed the score and the soundtrack in general. So yeah.
Yeah.
I think we both agree that we don't like this film, but how are you going to make it better?
I'm going to hire a script writer to fix the script, get rid of the racism, get rid of the misogyny, have them drink Lone Star beer, tone Steve Zahn down a bit, get rid of all the ridiculous misdirections from Tim. I don't know why he was such a fucking liar.
Right.
For sport or whatever. It just seems weird.
Yeah.
I just don't understand.
Yeah, I agree with how I'd make it better. Same thing. I would take out a lot of those misdirects. It's fine to have, you know, one good misdirect. But not just misdirect after misdirect after misdirect. It's like they couldn't decide on which one they wanted to use. So they just were like, fuck it, put them all in there. Oops, all misdirect. I think it could have been made shorter. There was a lot of times where it just dragged.
Oh yeah, it was way too long. It was 2 hours and 7 minutes.
I paused it.
Fucking ridiculous.
I paused it to like go get, to go make some tea. But about halfway through, and I was like, I was like, oh, maybe I should just wait till it's over. And I was like, I'll go ahead and pause it now. I'll just go make some. And I realized I was only halfway through the movie. Yeah. And I thought like, fuck, dude, you gotta be kidding me. There's still an hour left. What the fuck else is there to say? And apparently not much. It was just, I would have also, I would have had some younger consultants on the script and the character, the character development and the songs that the supposedly famous guy is supposed to be famous for. I would have gotten some actual like Gen Xers in there who were young at the time to go over that shit and be like, nope, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. You've already got Sonic Youth doing the soundtrack and the score anyway. Have Sonic Youth write that motherfucker's songs.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that worked about Scott Pilgrim is they had Beck write the songs for the fake bands. And yeah. He actually knew what the fuck he was doing. So it sounded natural. They sounded like weird garage bands from a big city in the mid-2000s. Like, it sounded accurate. That's how I would have... I guess that's how I would have made it better.
Yeah.
I think you could keep a lot of the misogyny and racism in there, but it has to mean something. It has to be part of some sort of social commentary or character development. Tim starts out racist, but then ends up getting to know AJ Naidoo's character, and that becomes part of his character development. Yeah.
They could have saved BB's life.
Right. And come together for that and had this beautiful moment where, you know, they probably, they could have, used that to develop the character and make it kind of make sense and have like all the casual racism in there mean something because it at least ended somewhere. And I know that that's, you know, a tired trope of white guys racist, you know, becomes friends with someone who's not white, stops being racist. But it wasn't as tired of a trope in 1996, I guess. So
I totally forgot that this was a stage play first.
Oh, fuck, you're right. It was. I fucking forgot about that shit too, man.
The stage play premiered in 1994.
Oh, wild.
It says here that the music is by Stuart Copeland. From the Police.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
The music that Pony plays?
I don't know. It just says music by Stuart
Copeland. Oh, okay. I'm going to guess that's what it is. Because, yeah, it was definitely...
Probably,
The score was definitely Sonic Youth. Like, I could even tell listening to it. I was like, oh, that's 100% Sonic Youth. And then I saw their name flash on the screen at the end. So, and I know we covered this in our other podcast, but I guess I'll go ahead and say this since you know, somebody might listen to this one that doesn't listen to our other one. So the whole reason we chose this movie was because, you know, in the early 2000s, people kept telling me to watch the movie Suburbia.
Yep.
And I worked at a video store, so I went and found Suburbia. And it was this movie, but they were not talking about this movie. There's also a movie that came out in 1981 called Suburbia by a director named Penelope Spheris that we were going to cover on the next episode. So I accidentally watched this one thinking this was the quote-unquote punk movie that everybody was raving about. And I couldn't believe that people were saying they liked this movie. I thought it was an absolute piece of crap, and I got made fun of endlessly for accidentally watching this one.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I think the scale we should use for a quality scale. So we have two scales that we use. We have a quality scale, and we have a punk scale. Our punk scale is just three different categories. It's the same every time. We've got poser, which is the lowest, punk'em or rocker, which is, you know, pretty punk. And then we have upper crust, which is the most punk a movie can possibly be. Then we have our quality scale. So I think we should use Coors Lights as our scale for quality.
It's gotta be fucking Lone Stars, dude.
We gonna correct it? Okay, we'll do Lone Stars.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's Lone Stars.
Lone Stars it is. What is number should we go with?
A 6-pack of Lone Stars or a 12-pack of Lone Stars?
Let's do a 12-pack of Lone Stars. Okay. Right. So quality
clearly
scale.
Clearly this is some fucking poser shit.
Yeah. So on the punk scale, I'm going to give it a poser. I think that's pretty obvious at this point. What are you going to give it on the punk scale?
Oh, poser. Yeah,
poser,
for sure.
Yeah. Quality scale.
There's not even a question.
I am going to probably give it a higher rating than most people think because I did enjoy some of the acting performances. So I'm going to give it 4 out of 12 Lone Star beers.
I'm giving it 3.
Okay.
For the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
Three Lone Star beers out of 12.
Yeah, some of the performances are the only thing that saved this from being totally unwatchable, in my opinion.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. this may sound like a dumb question, but I always like to ask, would you recommend this movie to anyone?
No.
No, same. I wouldn't either.
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Unless it was like, you know, when people visit Chicago, you know, people will buy you Malort.
Yeah.
Like I would recommend this to someone the way people buy shots of Malort for people visiting Chicago.
Yeah. So people visiting Austin should have to watch this movie?
Yeah, sure.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cooper, if you're listening, you need to make people watch Suburbia when they come to Austin.
Yeah.
To visit.
Not to be confused with Suburbia.
Or instead, you could save them the pain and just punch them in the dick. I've watched it 3 times now, and I hate myself a little more each time I put myself through it.
I appreciate it more now than I did the first time I watched it, because I think since I've matured, I can appreciate things like the performances, some of the, you know, more technical aspects of, you know, the videography and, you know, things like that. Yeah, you're right. The shots were set up well. It was well lit. The audio was great. And the performances were, you know, anywhere from good to great, depending.
Yeah. No, I mean, I don't... the cast was... They did a great job with the shit sandwich they were given. Yep. All right. So next, we're going to review the actual punk rock classic Suburbia by Penelope Spheris. I actually started watching it today. I'm about halfway through. There are a lot of things I forgot about it.
I have not rewatched it yet. I'm going to try to watch it tomorrow. There is, well, I did watch the trailer, and there was some things I started remembering. I did eventually watch this one, after I got, you know, laughed out of a room for watching the wrong one. I did eventually see the other one, and, there's some pretty disturbing stuff in it. Penelope Spheris is, probably best known for her documentary series, The Decline of Western Civilization, or her most popular movie that she has ever directed, Wayne's World.
Wayne's World?
Yeah. Wayne's World. And there are some interesting stories about her and Mike Myers not getting along. But we'll get into that when we actually review her movie. We're going to end this podcast with the trailer. Obviously, no video, just audio. But if you do want to watch the video trailer... it's on YouTube, and if you want to watch the entire movie, it's on Tubi. In fact, I have a feeling that a lot of the movies we're going to review are probably only available on Tubi.
before we sign off again, I forgot one other thing. We have our we have a patron. We have our very first patron.
Oh yeah,
Mr. Power. I would like to thank you for supporting us on Patreon. And I am going to talk to a friend of mine and try and get you some goodies for being our first patron. Thank you ever so much.
Is that Max Power?
Maybe. It just said Mr. Power.
Yeah.
I assume it's Max Power.
It must be. Yeah.
It's got to be.
He has his own theme song, you know.
Max Power, he's the man. Whose name you'd love to touch, but you mustn't touch. His name sounds good in your ear, but when you say it, you mustn't fear, 'cause his name can be said by anyone.
Nah, Max Power.
Yeah, do you got anything else?
Nope.
Don't
watch this movie. It sucks.
Yeah, don't watch this movie. But do visit our website, www.prairiepunkpress.com. Become a patron. click on any of the links on there. They all go to great stuff because it's all our stuff. Some of them go nowhere. Don't worry about those. Mm-hmm. Go to the ones that go to stuff.
People have sent me some photos that I'm going to upload to our Instagram page, which is at prairie.punks with an X. And you know, it'll be on our Facebook page too. Message us, email us, interact with us, send us stories, send us movies that you think we should review. Send us movies that you want to review with us.
Yeah.
If you would like. River's Edge is one. I'm looking forward to two.
Yeah, it's gonna be Sarah. Yep.
Yeah.
Johnny for Straight to Hell.
Yeah.
My wife wants to do Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Okay, I've never seen that, so I will wait to watch it until it's time for taking notes for reviews.
Sure. It'll probably be our first musical, maybe. I don't know, unless we do another one before then. I guess, yeah, I should probably go walk my dog.
I drank my LaCroix, and now I have to pee.
All right, you should do that. Now I should take my dog out to pee.
Yeah, do that.
Word. All right.
Good night.
Goodbye, everyone.
Meet the kids from suburbia. There's Jack.
Wake up and smell the coffee, man.
Sheila.
Fast and my scars are ready.
Joe.
That could be there all your life.
And Ethan.
I feel kind of scared.
You'll love them. Or hate them.
Metal rejects running wild in our street.
Their music.
We're talking about kids. Kids like yours and mine.
Well, I'm damn sure they aren't my kids.
Their home.
This is the best home any of us ever had. Besides, if we didn't have each other, we wouldn't have anything.
And nobody's gonna take it away from them.
You shut up!
You molested your own daughter, you scumbag.
Hasta luego, shitface.
A new movie about a new generation. Suburbia.
Was ever since it's been a stop on call.